Our speaker tonight is somebody that I've known for most of her recovery and most of my recovery. She has been an integral part of my recovery over the years. I've watched this individual grow. She's attended meetings in the Highlands at different times in her recovery. I don't know if it would take too long to say all the things that I could say about this individual. She is like a sister to me. And I'm happy to be able to introduce her tonight and allow her to share her experience, strength, and hope with everyone here. So without further ado, Dawn, would you share with us for 40 to 45 minutes or whatever you're comfortable with? The floor is yours.
Hi, everybody. My name's an addict. My name's an addict. That's how good I'm doing today, everybody. I'm an addict. My name is Dawn.
Hi,
Hi,
Dawn.
Dawn.
Hi,
Hi, everybody.
Dawn. Hi, Dawn.
Some of the people here have heard me, and it's going to be a tearjerker because you know how I am. I get pretty emotional when I share about our fellowship, about my process, my journey. Here goes. Everybody's got a using story. We all used. We all have a past. It's usually pretty messy. Mine's very messy. I think sometimes that the only thing that's really important now about my active addiction was, one, I was an addict. Two, I did all the things that our literature says, jails, institutions, been clinically dead twice. So all of those things I did. Three is I am not a one key tag wonder. I started to try to get clean in another fellowship when I was 14 and I was in and out. And at 20, I surrendered. The only part of that whole process is the night before in a blackout, I tried to kill my baby brother and I don't remember it. And the thing is that I raised him. There was 13 years between us. And so for, about 5 seconds, it could have probably been longer. I saw my addiction on somebody else's face. I saw the fear, I saw the terror, and when I saw his face, I knew. It was 11 o'clock in the morning. I went to a noon meeting for the other fellowship, and I have never looked back. Now, before that, I think probably the other thing I need to say is that I had like 18 or 19 white tee tags. I went to the 11th World Convention in Miami and then I came back and I used. I thought everybody was loaded on the coffee, though there was stuff in the coffee pots. So that gives you an idea of who and how I was. So my clean date is May 20th, 1982. I think that's what it is. You know what happens when you grow up and get old in the fellowship? They don't tell you all these things that happen to your body and your memory. I wish they would have, but I'm glad they didn't. So, everybody hears these sayings like, go to meetings, don't use, no matter what. Get a sponsor, get a home group, do service. I did all those things because I was terrified. Absolutely terrified that I was going to use. And based on my coming into the fellowship and staying this time, I didn't have another recovery in me. And I knew that somewhere inside of me. I'm the oldest of six, now five, because that kid that saved me, 21 days after his 20th birthday, he committed suicide, and I couldn't save him. And so for a long time, I carried survivor's guilt about that. I can tell you that in the time that I've been here, I have learned that dying is a part of living. And I have buried people from the AIDS virus, cancer, overdoses, car wrecks, suicide. And one of the things I think that being in recovery has taught me is that every day I have, that I'm 6 feet above the ground is a gift. And I don't know about anybody else here, but I can tell you some days I don't look at it that way. Some days I look at it like, oh my God, you got to be kidding me. So my story goes like this: recovery. My first 10 years in recovery, I couldn't find myself. I was heavy, I was skinny. I wore glasses, I wore contacts. I had short hair, I had long hair. I had blonde hair, I had brown hair. I had black hair, blue hair. And my outfits went the same because I couldn't get comfortable in my own skin. One thing I will tell you is that they said go to 90 meetings in 90 days. I went to 180 some meetings because old timer in the other fellowship told me I needed to go to meetings like I used, and I listened. The first year, 3 years of my recovery was it was primarily our parent fellowship. And I say that because later on, you're going to find out that I became an NA Nazi and I was not kind and I was not loving and I was not spiritual at all. Because there was only three Narcotics Anonymous meetings in the county in South Florida that I lived in. And I think maybe in the three counties, there might have been 20 meetings if I was lucky. And what happened was, I guess it was about 3 years. I had 3 years. Some people came down from Ohio. I said, you know, we need help. And I made a decision that I was going to only go to Narcotics Anonymous meetings. And there are several reasons for that. One is I could say F, F, F anytime I wanted to. Nobody cringed. Nobody looked at me like I was crazy. Two is that I realized by this time that I wasn't dealing with a substance. I was dealing with the disease of addiction. And in early recovery, it was shoes and credit cards. Anything outside of myself to help me escape me. That's my definition of addiction. So I made a decision that I was going to stick and stay. And, my mother and my sister are also in recovery, and I'm the baby, so they are have more time than I do. And you know, my mom said I was going to use, and so I had this thing called spite. I still have it sometimes today. So I stayed clean out of spite, and I helped grow the fellowship out of spite because I needed more than one meeting or two meetings or three meetings a week where I lived. And I would drive because in Florida, the fellowship was starting to grow and I would drive 4 hours. We'd all drive. You know, we didn't, I was part of a crew that the only thing we had was each other. So, and we were relatively young and we were definitely crazy. And most of those people are still in recovery today. And, you know, if somebody was having a dance, we'd just get in the car and drive and go. And we would go to conventions and we'd put, you know, five people or six, 10 people in a room. We'd stay up all night and play spades. And the only thing looking back was I didn't use, but my behavior, today I know that my behavior was a little bizarre. However, I was doing it with other people, so it was all okay to me. About that same time, Something happened inside of me. I guess it was about 3 years, right after I made the decision to stay. I was doing all the right things, and I had a job, and I was paying rent, and I was a productive member of society, and I was doing all this stuff in the fellowship, and I was of service, and but I wanted to exit the planet because something inside of me still did not, like on the outside, I look really pretty. And I'm not saying pretty like beautiful. I'm talking like icing on a cake, that's professionally decorated. But on the inside, my cake was horrible. Like, and I couldn't figure it out. And what I can tell you is for 2 weeks, I got up in the middle of the night and contemplated killing myself. And today I know that it was that I made my first and only third step because I made a decision during those 2 weeks that I will, to will, thy will, however that looks. Now, sometimes today I might kick and scream, but I still do it. Because I already know that I wouldn't have a life and I wouldn't have a will if it wasn't for this fellowship. So I think that was my ultimate surrender. And that what happened was I started to really integrate the fellowship and I really started to integrate spiritual principles. And I really started to look at myself and I was pretty an extremist. At the same time, I became, for lack of a better word, I became Gestapo in the fellowship. You couldn't say certain words in my meetings. Mean things. Oh, you're go to Alcoholics Anonymous. You're an addict and alcoholic. Are you cross addicted? I mean, it was just snarky, and it wasn't loving, and it wasn't kind. For me and for our fellowship at the time, I think it was an act of desperation that we really wanted to stand on our own 2 feet. And maybe it's this. I really wanted to stand on my own 2 feet. And I did all those things you're supposed to, well, I think you're supposed to do. I went to meetings and I had a job and I got married and we were the NA couple and we did all this kind of stuff. And that was probably the first 10 years of my recovery. The second 10 years of my recovery was a whole different story. This was in the 80s, so the virus was pretty active. AIDS, people were dying. All my friends were having babies. I couldn't do it. So in my head, I kept saying I was broken. There's something wrong with me. This is what happens when I use all those drugs. And I realized that it didn't have anything to do with any of that. My husband at the time and I, we realized that our marriage wasn't working. And what I can tell you is this fellowship and having spiritual principles taught me that I could start a relationship in love and I could change it in love. And he and I did that. The fellowship did not. They picked sides. It was pretty messy on the outside, but we were really okay because we started off as friends and we ended as friends. And we remained friends for a very long time afterwards. And that was another gift of my recovery was that if I make a decision that I love you, I'm going to care about you forever. Now, I've also learned that I can love you from across the room, across the city, across the state, across the pond. That I can love you and not like your behavior and honor your process without getting hit. I hope that makes sense. So I also realized that the great I I can't do this by myself. I can't. There was a time that the second part was money, property, and prestige diverted me from my primary purpose. And I guess I was going into the end of my second decade in recovery. I got married again. He was younger. We started a business. It grew very quickly, very fast. And it diverted me. The second thing that happened was is that I became a mom. In that marriage, I adopted two beautiful children from Russia. And I became a mom. And so when I think about it now, when it happened, it was like I was, every time I look at my kids, I would cry. And I would cry for a lot of reasons, but I would cry because I was entrusted with these two little people. And if they really knew who I was, that would have never happened. Because at over 20 years, I still looked at myself as the person walking in the door, the animal. Because I never want to forget where I came from, because I never want to go back there. Today, my beautiful little children are one's in college, an honors roll, going to be a lawyer, an Indian chief, or a doctor. She can't make up her mind. My son is living with a girl that he loves, and he's on his own two feet, and he's paying his own bills, and he's paying his own rent, and he's suiting up, and he's showing up. And they're both kind and loving. They both have their quirks. There's no substance use issues. And so today, when I look at my adult children, I think, oh, okay. Like I did something right. You didn't come with a book, and I did definitely make some mistakes. And my kids grew up in the rooms. I mean, because I was a single mom, and I didn't know, I couldn't always do, I had to bring them my to the meetings. And sometimes I'd put them on an Apple iPad, and I'd put headphones in their heads, and they got to the point where they wanted to go to NA functions, they wanted to go to picnics, and they wanted to know what this was really all about. And for that, I'm grateful. For that, I'm grateful that that the fellowship as a whole supports families, because I think that's really important, because I don't think my disease just affected me. At all. So, what happened with that was money, property, and prestige diverted me from my primary purpose. I got divorced because I found out that my husband at the time was selling drugs, a lot of them. And he made that choice and wasn't going to change his mind, and I couldn't do that. So, my kids and I left. And the other part was that when I talk about money, property, and prestige, I'm talking about a lot of money and a lot of outside things and three houses and Harleys and cars and luxury and luxury. And when I left with some furniture and my kids. And I restarted my whole life. And that I had a tribe who really helped and supported me when I didn't think I could do it. So the other part is this, and I don't usually quote literature and do all that stuff, but I'm going to say this one part because this is what it is. I think it's in the Living Clean, and it's in the preface, and it says, recovery is a full contact, lifelong process. And I can tell you today, it is a full contact, lifelong process. It has had its ups and it has had its downs. It has had its share of joy and pain and sorrow and happiness. I have people in my life who I've known for decades. And I have people in my life that I just met in the last year. I know how to be in a relationship. And I don't just mean a sexual relationship or romantic, like, and I learned that from my sponsors in the beginning because I didn't know how to do that either. You know, sponsorship. I have a sponsor. I call my sponsor at least twice a week. I talk to my grand sponsor every week. Some of those very basic things that I did in the beginning, I still do. You know, I'm back in Florida. I don't live in Florida anymore. I moved to help my kids go to a better school to have a better life. And I came back to Florida because my sister, who's got more time than I do, has cancer. And she was in remission for 8 months. And last Thursday, she had to do a brain scan because cancer is back. So that's, I'm going to go and support my sister. This will be my second time. And the other part of why I'm here is because I haven't seen people I love in 5 years. Jay is my brother from another mother. Long story. We've known each other for years and years, 45 years, 40 years, something. I can't even tell you. And, you know, his dad had an incident. And so I came to see his dad, who was like my dad. And it was wonderful and sad. And, you know, I realized that I haven't done my part. Like, I haven't suited up and showed up in some relationships that are really important to me because in my head, I always thought they were going to be here. The thing they don't tell you about growing up and growing old in the fellowship is that nobody gets off the rock. And my head still says I'm 25. And my body says, F you, Dawn, you're not. That the things that I used to think were fun are no longer. And that I understand why sponsorship and letting go of certain service commitments in the spirit of rotation is important because I would like to give everybody a chance. And my service now is very different than my service in my first 3 decades. My service is to my community and out, and I'm on a youth prevention panel for substance use. And they called me and they asked me to be on this. And first of all, I was shocked. And second of all, I was like, oh, this is a way I can give back and be of service. I can't believe that I'm sitting where I'm sitting. And I know this is going to sound really strange, but it might not. And that I'm looking at my clean date and my clean time sitting here thinking, when did this happen? Like, I know I was present in my life and I know that I suited up and showed up. But this is somebody who didn't think. There was a bet in my family I wasn't going to see 21, 18. The first bet was 18. The second bet was 21, that I wasn't going to live to see it. And now I'm here, a 62. Ain't no shame in my game. And I have 42 years in recovery, and I've had this really wonderful, amazing life. And I still suit up, and I still show up, and I still do service. And that those of you who've never heard me share, when I share, I get really emotional because I get overwhelmed with gratitude. And when I share, I have a tendency to see who I was and who I am today. And sometimes it's like, when did this happen? And how did this happen? Well, it happened along the way, and it happened by working steps, and it happened by taking suggestions, and it ha happened by making mistakes. It happened by admitting when I was wrong. It happened when I became willing to make a change. It just happens. You know, if you want what we have to offer and are willing to do it, then it's going to happen for you in spite of you. Or it happened for me in spite of me, I should say. Today I know that I do make a difference. And I'm not saying that out of I statement, but I never look at myself the way anybody else does, ever. Somewhere inside of me is that animal, fucked up 18-year-old who could never do anything right. She still lives in me, and sometimes she rears her ugly head and tells me, you know, you're a complete fuck up and you're never going to do anything right. And then what happens is my recovery steps in and says, that's who you were. And we never want to forget who you were because we never want to go back there. And so, you know, that's part of the way I keep myself in check. You know, when my head says, oh, you don't need a meeting, or no, you could have told Jay you don't really feel like sharing. You know, that's my wiring in my head saying, oh, I'm above this, or oh, I don't need this. Somebody recently asked me, you know, Dawn, you have all this time. Why you still go to meetings? Well, first of all, my head tells me I need them and I'm going to go. And probably two is that there is somebody in a meeting that I go to that needs to have a hope, to needs to understand that, you know, there is recovery, there's long-term recovery, that what we say in our meetings is true. And that I was listening to a meeting earlier about how different it is, how different our fellowship is. And I agree with that, but I also agree with the fact of how different I am. So if I can grow and change, then our fellowship should be able to grow and change too. And that I am grateful. I can't tell you how grateful I am. I can't tell you that all those times that I just wanted to say F it and I wanted to numb it. And when I didn't think I could take life on life's terms one more second, that I just kept suiting up and showing up. And then it got better. And that things beyond my wildest dreams happened. And that sometimes the gift always comes in some pretty shitty ass wrapping paper. And I've learned not to get caught up in the wrapping paper. As long as I don't use, and then no matter what color, as long as I don't use, I reach out for help. I go to a meeting. I'm of service. I share my experience, strength, and hope. Oh, this is the killer for me. I allow somebody to be of service to me, which means when I'm asking for help, if I don't ask for help, I'm robbing somebody of service. I'm robbing somebody of that feel good. And I didn't work this hard to be a thief. You know, I have to get over my ego and over my pride and think I'm Superwoman. And, you know, I need help. And so these are all the things I've learned and all the gifts that I've gotten from being here. And I can't tell you how grateful I am. I just really can't. My name's Dawn, and I'm an addict. Thanks for letting me share.